This program was funded by a generous grant from the Gay Auckland Business Association Charitable Trust. For more information, visit gabba.org.nz.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Taho tōku māma, ko Mauau me Putauake ngā maunga, ko Ngāti Ranginui me Ngāti Awa, ngā iwi, ko Ngāti Amara Waho me Ngāti Pukeko, ngā hapū. I whānau mai, I pakeke mai a hau, I roto I te moana o Tauranga, I huri a pā, tōku kuia, nāna I pāngai a hau me waku tungāne, I roto I te marae o huri a I Tauranga moana, I haere a hau ki te kura o Peterehema Native School, pera te ingoa o Tomata Kura, ka haere ki Tauranga moana, te kāreti o Tauranga, me te kāreti mō ngā kōtiro, ana ka wehi atu a hau I reira ki te haere mai ki Tamaki Makaurau. In the years that I held here on this earth, I was born into a tribe of Ngāti Ranginui, Ngāi Tamarāwaho Hapu, and the Takitumu Waka, in the Moana of Tauranga in Judea Pā, and went to Bethlehem Native School and went to Tauranga College and Tauranga Girls College, and then came to Tamaki Makaurau because there was no teachers training college or university, and I was pursuing education with early childcare, and later on worked in primary school and intermediate and secondary school. Became a secondary school when my two children were born, and Titirangi, where I lived with my husband in the Wild West of Auckland. And it was there that I also worked with the community law service, with working with the justice system and being a worker for our young people who are at risk. And also Nick Brown, who was the judge for the Henderson Court, and he asked and required that I become his court report writer, and then worked with those inmates as well by being the first educator within the Pārimurama maximum security and medium security prison, teaching the Māori inmates and those who were incarcerated, but majority and specifically Māori. And then in 1989, I won a position after being an educator in Pārimurama prison at the University, Auckland University of Technology. And it was there in 1989 and 1990 where my colleague Fee Day and all the Takatāpui Wahine Pākehā were being harassed, literally, by the Big Boys Club, who were those at management level and who ran the university. So there was a type of grief that was going on there, and I thought, well, I can't work with whānau who are grieving. I needed to intervene, and my intervention was to say, change your attitude towards what's happening. Do not fight the fight, but what you've got to do is build up a resistance and be resilient, and to prove to the colleagues that are being disrespectful to you and in your mana, then uphold yourself and be proud of who you are. And I would act as your intervention person to intervene and to also go straight to Dr. Hinchcliffe at the time, who was the head of the university. And because he was a Christian person who had served in the community and looked at the injustices of humanity throughout and always preached it or even used it within his lecturing or his deliveries. And I thought, he's a good man that will be able to help us to sustain the dignity and the mana in each human person, regardless of their sexuality or they're indifferent towards the life that they lead. But they are intellectual people within the system of education, and that's what we must look at, the gifts that they have in their kitty. So slowly the changes came about. It was in 1991, I said, let's get together as a whānau. You can't work in isolation. The kaupapa for Māori, mehene koe e ki atu he hata mea nui o tēnei au, mā koe ki atu he tangata, he tangata, he tangata. If you were to ask me what is the greatest gift in this world, I have to tell you, it is people, it is people, it is people. It's not a person, it's people. So therefore we have to change the attitude of whānau and work as a collective group to reinforce and to have people hear what you have to say, because we're not listening, we're just talking past each other.
What kind of hardships were they encountering?
They were under the Treaty of Waitangi, and they were teaching that treaty, because all of the gay women had gone to classes to learn about the Treaty of Waitangi, because the partnership is tangata whenua and also the Crown. And who are the Crown? It's the Pākehā people who at the time signed the treaty. So they had learnt it, and they were trying to bring back the injustices and the qualities that needed to be looked at. And it was being overridden by those people who were men mainly, who belonged to the Big Boys Club, and well, you know the rest. And so to change that attitude, we had to change the structure of what our thoughts were. And mine was always to be taught by my nanny to, you're more powerful if you work as a whānau. Everybody has their taonga and their kete, and we don't cross paths, but we get together and work out strategically how we're going to do it, who will do it, and then when we're going to do it, and monitor it so we have an outcome straight away. And that was always my teachings from my nanny, and I implemented that same structure, because they were the things that I come with, that was my knowledge base, my kete. So I worked with that, and then it did work. So it began to see changes. So once we got the group together with the staff, all the takatāpui staff, didn't matter what nationality or what ethnic group or culture you belong to, the main kaupapa, he tangata, he tangata. It is people of this people. Aha ko te tangata. Although we are, it doesn't matter who the person is, it says. We still come under the kaupapa of that whakatauki, of that proverbial saying. So we held on to that.
I find it really interesting. It's an interesting idea that you change your own ideas and your own mindset first to overcome a problem that may not be yours.
But it's human problem, so it must be mine. Because we are, first and foremost, born into a family of the humankind. And we make a connection. We have a whakapanaungatanga, which means we are born into that whānau, and we have a relationship because of that mere fact that we are human. So who am I to do nothing else but to get on with it? And time's so short that, you know, the strategic planning for me, and I learned that from my nanny, is that mehe mea e he ana, mea whakatika. If you see that something is incorrect, you correct it. But you use your skills to collectively get together, kōrero, kanohi ki te kanohi, talk face to face, not on pen and paper and all these wonderful technology things or other ways of communicating. If you communicate any person to person and you speak what's in your gut, for a woman, it's what's in the inner depth of her womb, because of you giving birth to a child, you're the only one that feels the pain, the last push. When the nurse said or the doctor say push, you know that pain. And it's a wonderful pain, but it can be overcome. And with a male, well then, the same sort of things. Because we complement each other, and that's the other thing they had to change. Males have a job to do, women have a job to do, and they complement each other. How do they complement? Because that's why God created the male first. And he knew the male was very lonely, so he created the female. And within the male is the sperm that creates life. And in the female is the egg. And you have that with all living things that God created. So what's the difference? There ain't no difference.
How does Takatapui fit into that?
It fits into it because they are a whānau of the humankind. My whanaunga tanga to every human person is my relationship, because we have two eyes, two ears, a body, a soul. We have all the elements that are there, and we have all the things that make us tick. And it's the same. And the only thing that's different is the culture that you infiltrate it with when you're brought up as a person, as a whānau. So all I ask people to do is just respect, have respect. The word respect, what does that mean? When you respect yourself, you would like to be treated the way you want to be respected by others. Simple. And therefore, Takatapui to me are just a label that says that, well, you fit into this label. I said, listen, that person is my whānau. I have a relationship with him because, first and foremost, he was born into the humankind. So I don't see anything outside of the philosophy and the deep philosophical way that I've been taught by my nannies. So there's no discrimination. Discrimination comes with me with people who have phobic ideas and thoughts because of the way they've been taught. But I can still unravel all those in a few moments' time and say, Auntie, why do you wear the red ribbon? And I had to turn and say, well, actually, this is the first ribbon in the world that humans wore, and it's a ribbon of hope. It's hope for you, it's hope for me, because we're humans. And they said, well, what does it indicate? And I said, what is the indication? The foundation with those people who have contracted the HIV virus AIDS. And it's hope that they will live. In the earlier days, as early as when I first started in 1990 and 91 and onwards, when I worked with Ian Kai here and had the privilege to meet all those of our Māori men, I speak mainly of Māori because they were the community I worked with, I actually was privy to them letting me into their world. They had come home to die. They had contracted the HIV virus by being sexually involved with males of other lands. And these men that came back had sexual men that had contracted the virus in Australia and in the other countries that had come. But mainly the ones we work with, the ones from Australia, because the Māori knows when the body is deteriorating and they're away from home, the kaupapa is to always come home to the papakainga, to your place where you stand, your feet, and where your tūpunas are, and those who have gone before you, to come back and to die and be buried amongst your own people. That is the kaupapa. So when they came back and I began to learn, and to learn means that I need to educate myself, is what this is all about, because I didn't look at what they were. I just looked at they were whānau. They come home and they come into my care with time. I did something about them. So what I did was actually started with karakia, which is a prayer, and to all speak in Māori, because in their brain, Māori is the language that they had been, and then doesn't matter that they've forgotten about it, but the brain's like a computer. When you call back and recall, then comes forward, then you can guarantee. So once I did that, and I worked with the families and the partners, especially because the partners were of other culture, but to me they were still whānau. And it was to talk to them and say, the first thing we will do is to get together, have karakia, and to express and explain first how the evening or how the day would go. And so everyone's on the same page, rowing the same waka at the same beat and same time. And to me, that's part of the knowledge that I've been given from my nanny, to express to people quite clearly what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and why you're going to do it. If there are any questions, that's the time to ask. But at the same time, we ask that everybody have respect for the process that we're going to go through. And there was no questions, no qualms, no nothing. And they accepted it because what I was trying to do is to feed the waiter, which has been lost. The waiter being the inner depth of the two waters that run, the spiritual water that creates all humankind, and the water that brings us out as a mother loses the water and she's ready to give birth to her child. The water and the stream allows humankind to come to this earth. They are the two, wai, meaning water, rua, meaning two waters. And it's a simple explanation my nanny had taught me. Everything is so simple that it's other people's way of thinking and thought, and it complicates things. And I'm not one to complicate no one, because I tell it like it is. And if people are not sure about it, then we have another go. But repetitious teaching is how I begin to then perform everything that I do. And the idea also was to ask to the people who had the virus at the time, where would they like their body to lie? And they need to come straight here, kanohi to kanohi. Do your whānau know that you have contracted the virus? No, they say. Do you want them to know? And so that was a process to go through. And whatever answer they have, they may have this negative thought because it's fear, and then manage to turn it around and say, that fear, it's good to be fearful. Ihi is the word in Māori. When you have ihi, it's that to be quite fearful. It's just to caution you as a human being to just be a little bit careful how you step and how you move forward. And that's important. So we have ihi, we have mana. Mana is the power, as you know, that we all have. We're born with it. And then the wairua that we have, we're all born with that. But the wairua is a very important part as well. The wairua then begins to react once the body, the tinana, is dead, declared dead, and can't function at all. Then the wairua rises from the dead and has another job to do and another space to go to. Once I explain to everybody that, they said, oh, Auntie, we want more. So continuously I played to their tune, and if they got hoha and they didn't know because of the pain that they were going through, then I'd say, look, your pain is in your mind. Every pain in every human being is created by the mind. So you have to teach your mind to say, how much pain do you want to take? If you have pain, you will get pain. If you say you want to die, you will die. Then your body will deteriorate and all your organs in your body will stop functioning. Is that what you want? Oh, hell no, that's it. And I said, well, ship up, man, or bloody ship. Save up or ship out. And I speak their language. Those to me, they are only just words that are not mine. But if it's effective, then I will use them. They're only adjectives to describe a situation, as far as I'm concerned. But there we go. And then when the time comes, and then I say, you have to plan your tangi, that the whole whānau needs to get together and support you and say, okay, so we'll do that. What humanities do you want? You don't have to have humanities. You can have wonderful music. I said, yeah, I don't care what sort of music you have. It's your tummy. It's your farewell. I said, you think about it, and you come up with some ideas, and I'll give you till next week to do it. So the shorter time you give to people, if you're in pain and they know they are in that useless situation, to them it is useless, but to me it's not. The mind is still there. I said, your mind and your intellect is the most wonderful gift God given, because he gave it to us, the last gift of his creation. why didn't he give it to all the other things that he created? He gave it to us because he wanted to be creating humans like his own image, so we can have a thought, so we can then begin to plan, we can begin to do things, and we can have choices, because he made the choice to go where you are now. But you can get out of it, because you have the mind to do it. And I'm grateful to my nanny because she taught me how to use the power of the mind, because just a little example, I was born a heart patient, and then when I was stressful, then she just calmed me down and speak to me, and then I'd teach me how to use my mind to say, take your mind to a safe place, a nice warm place, a nice place that you want to be. And it was always on top of my mother's grave because she died early. And I used to fall asleep and cry there, and then I could feel tamatara going right through the inner depth to the bones of my whole existence. And so I'd take myself there. So I created that scenario for all the men who had the virus, or people even now who are sick. And I said, create that for yourself. And have a wonderful time with it. Go away with the fears. It's wonderful.
Could you tell me about Ian Kaihi?
Yes. Ian Kaihi is of Ngāpuhi background. And his mother is from up the very far north. And Te Aupouri. And she... He came to Auckland after attending Kaitaia College to train as a primary school teacher. And when he came at the time, the training college used to be in the North Shore. And he met my sister, Catherine Hōtere, and they trained together. And then at the same time, there's 2 years training. Towards the second year, they had to close the North Shore campus down and send all the students to the Auckland Teachers Training College in Ipsum. Mm. And he worked with my sister because she was teaching at several schools, and they met up together again at the Beta Intermediate, which is in Mangere. And there he became a student teacher under her guardianship because she was a year ahead of him. And they became very good friends. And they used to come to our home because my husband and I and my 2 children had built our home in Titirangi. And they used to come. And because my sister needed help as well with her work with Teachers Training College, she brought Ian along. And that's how we first met. Yeah. And we found out that his whakapapa is the same whakapapa as my children's father. The Makiri family are from South Hokianga, that's Utakura and Horeki, and Ian's father is from there as well. So there was that whakapapa connection, and because he's older than my 2 children, we just address each other as an uncle, and my... daughter and my son, his niece and nephew. So that started it. After many years of teaching, Ian decided that he wanted to look further afield for another vocation, and he spotted the advertisement for a Māori kaimahi worker with the Indian AIDS Foundation. And at that time, he applied for this job, and because I'd been a fire helping them, him and my sister, then he addressed me as Auntie Wai. And of course, my job was to just go and support him with his application and going through and talking a little bit about what the job description was, and being the first kaimahi Māori to represent Takatāpu Tāne and the whole of New Zealand. At that time, the main objective of that position was to help Māori Takatāpū and to go out and educate people in the marae. So, yeah, that was the whole idea, was that it would be Māori-focused, held on the marae throughout the motu. So,
Was this the first time that this job had been established?
Yes, that was the first time.
Do you know what year that was?
Yes, in 91. At the same time, I was a lecturer at AUT, and 91 was the year that he applied for the position, and he won it, and I went to support him at his interview with Warren. I can't remember Warren's name now, and he who was the head of the Mission AIDS Foundation.
Was that Warren Lindbergh?
Yes, that's right. That's Warren Lindbergh, and then. I went along, once he got the position, I also went along to support him with his the initiation and the training that he went through, because if I was to support him, my feeling was I need to know what the position entailed and what help I could give. And anyhow, that's just me. I just support anybody once you make a commitment. And yeah. So we had our orientation, and that I was part of that. And in a way of speaking, I think the first reaction was one of culture shock for the organisation, especially those people on the panel, and training as well. But didn't worry Warren, because it was more important that he had put out the position with others and wanted some input.
When you say culture shock, can you give some examples of what...
Yes, a culture shock is quite a specific one, because for too long the organisation had run just with, as I call it, just middle-class Pākehā people. And when I... then I needed to know, because I... done a whole lot of work with biculturalism and the treatment of Waitangi and those issues around it, and I was quite clear that Article 2 is to say that we need to know the tino rangatiratanga of the ownership of and running things our way. And although we had partners, and it hadn't been done before within the New Zealand AIDS Foundation and other organisations as well, that is a culture shock I talk about, that everybody hadn't the mindset to really think out quite clearly what specific things should partnership work under, because they had no modelling, to be fair to the organisation. Yeah. So it was thanks to Warren who... he saw the vision, he put it out there, and became very much a part of supporting Ian and the work that was ahead of him. And those are the sort of things also, it's just trial and error, and then with the input from myself and others, because I relied on my own resources in the community, and because I had a good knowledge of who the tangata whenua here is in Tamaki Makaurau, which is Ngāti Pātua o Ōrākei, and had worked with whānau of Waipareira out in the West Auckland, and Hwane Waititi, and knew most of the marae because of my background in working with the... as an educator in secondary school in Greenbar High School, where I worked and was still very much involved with the community work. So so we put forward, you know, a few things that could happen, and like I say, what worked worked, what didn't work still had to be worked at, because you need time. And time means 3 years is not enough. First year, you're just knowing the community and getting what your strategic plans would be out there so people then can. But because of the newness of the profession, and given that takatāpuri tāne wahine it's a unique community that a lot of things had to be pierced through and just quietly worked at, and that's the strategy I chose to use. Work with the people you know first, and then do a lot of kōrero and a lot of question asking, and at the same time I could find out all the questions that the community were asking. And so it was made safe for Ian, and most of the phobic ideas that humans had at the time was that they were scared of it, because like all humans, if you don't know knowledge, then you're frightened, and that was cool. But with working as it and having our community with takatāpuri tāne, we were able to get the Isherwood building here in Auckland, and that became our centre for all of us to meet with takatāpuri tāne and to gather together under the kaupapa there, he Māori tātou and our whakapapa, please, that we have a relationship and a whanaungatanga to each other. and there was nothing else. I didn't even think about, you know, the diverse uniqueness, because to me, if you, as I say, go back to that same pakatauki, he tangata, what is the most important thing? He tangata. So that's how we work. And it was good then, a lot of the people within the organisation, with Warren and all those who were there, then began to think, oh, it's not so bad after all. And a lot of the things just sort of fell into place. And so we were able to work together, not against each other, but still giving Ian space to say, this is a strategic plan. If tikka is the correct way of behaving in a given situation, then the opposite of that is tikka, which is incorrect. So, and using those things that I've learned from my nanny, they were very basic things. And I felt there was a safe way to go rather than get into confrontation or to have debates around why and why not, and yeah, who says so, and so on and so forth. So it worked. So our family began to grow, and Ian was able then to contact all the takatāpuri tāne, and it was his main object. I said, no, we start with a whānau first. A whānau is those people whom your position is saying now that you are going to be their rangatira and their leader, and we get them all in. Of course, like the grapevine or the kumara vine in Māori, you tell one person, next minute it just gravitates and everybody started coming, because they thought for the first time they had some space of their own that we could all get together under one kaupapa, and that is our own Māoriness and our own way of expressing how we should behave and live. And at that time, most of the boys were in the bogs up at K Road and all over the city. So just tell one person and next minute they're telling others to come on. And so I was asking, these are questions for me to ask, was to ask the organisation, what have you got to keep men safe, having sex with men? And so they provided all the get it on condoms and to be safe. So my job was to take leaders within different individual groups of takatāpuri and have a meeting with them first and say, the main kaupapa here is that you've all heard about the virus and you all know certain whānau that have come back with it or have got it. And I said, there's nothing to be scared of. What we've got to do is educate our people to use the condom and to be safe with it. Yeah. And so that being an educator, that is what we started off with. And they had a little room up in Pitt Street where they used to meet, or especially the transgender Tapatapuitani, and it was close for them to come in. And we'd open and after hours, because most of them do their work after hours. And it makes no sense sitting there during the daytime when all of them are asleep. So that's basically Ian Kaya and his work. And he used to pick up all the boys who had no transport. And he just had such a lovely heart. And because he had been out, I don't even think he was in the cloth of the ball, because his mother told you, his mother and his two sisters were twins. They are Tapatapu Wahine as well, and Ian, being the youngest of ten members in the family, lost his father when he was still a baby. And then his mother supported all the 10 children, and and that's Ian Kaihe.
In your educational work with the AIDS Foundation, what was the hardest part for you?
I guess, well, for me especially, I've been taught that I've got these skills that my nanny taught me. If you do something, you research it well, you do it well, and you don't look back, you look forward. And nothing's been a challenging thing for me. It's just that I feel very passionate about others who are less fortunate than me. And if it's in my power to make a difference in their life, then that has always been my coping. It doesn't matter who it is and where they come from. And because I've always been for the underdog and those who are less fortunate, through any circumstance, whether they be rich, poor, good,
What comes through a lot to me is that there's a huge level of respect,
yes,
and love and sharing.
Yes. Well, they, to me, are the philosophies behind that Pakatauki. And how do you teach respect? Respect is given if you are quite clear that whatever you plan and whatever you endeavour in life is that it's correct, that nobody can peer through and say, and say, oh, you can't do that, auntie, you can't do whatever, because I even turn those negative thoughts and ideas into be positive, because I always have the mind, oh God, please forgive them, they know not. And I do, so I have to make a difference and teach them, and I do believe in teaching, because I was born to be a teacher. It was my role that my nanny gave to me. And everyone teaches me, but aren't you scared of so-and-so? And I said, no, I'm not, because I know what I'm doing is correct. And if it's not correct, I then go and research and find out from the people internally, what is the mindset here? What is your thought? What is your plan? What's going on? Can you share so I can learn? Learn to then make a difference. If it's a difference to that person who, for some unknown reason, they have some undercurrent or underpinning point of view, then I say to them, I respect you. I respect your thoughts and ideas, because God gave us the intellect to think. And if you're still thinking about it, well, then here's what I can offer. Then I pose what... It's the problem solving for me is to always try to listen first, be a good listener, have an open mind, and be loving and being respectful, because I want the same, whatever that person gives to me, I demand. It's a demand for me, because I know it's correct. I don't want any crap. Why should I? It's wasting time. So, and for that, you can do all the talking in the silence. For me, it's your actions. The actions of how you will solve the problem, or how you will proceed to do whatever action that you want. And I always like to have an assessment process and the outcomes, and time is of the essence. I work with time, so to be a good time manager, to be able to be honest and to be respectful of others, and yeah. And those protocols of respect come with me having to quite clearly say, before we talk, I'd like to have a little karakia to pave our way and to ask the Supreme Being to give us this energy that is there so as we can accomplish whatever it is that we've got ahead of us. And then to give thanks afterwards and to acknowledge the person I'm speaking to or the people I'm speaking to, I acknowledge them. And to me, that's the respect that is given all the time, because I practice it. And then others then say, oh, we're going to have a karakia, auntie. I say, oh, that's lovely. How about you give us a karakia? Karakia is just talking to a higher being and concentrating on the issues that we have in front of us. Oh, I say, doesn't matter. You can learn how to do one. However small it is, it's like the green stone. He kuru pānama. Aha kua he ichi. He kuru pānama. It's as precious as that. So, and then was teaching all those and to Waiata, because I said, well, if you can't say a karakia, how about you Waiata? And that's the same form of you know, the words that you want to choose, and I teach them Waiata if they don't know. And yeah, but it's inclusive rather than exclusive. And it's to make people safe. I talk about cultural safety. That is what I mean. Being respectful of each other. And to whakaiti ourselves means to be humble. And there are certain times when we're having discussions that I can actually get into talking about things in a positive manner rather than negative. So that's me. Yeah.
Over your time with the AIDS Foundation, have you noticed a difference in Takatāpui, in how they relate to the AIDS Foundation, and how they relate to themselves through your work?
Yes, I have. It's changed. At the beginning, they didn't know about the New Zealand AIDS Foundation because it was a non-event. All they knew is that they were Takatāpui. They were classified as just being a human person that had made the choice to be unique, first and foremost. And however they behaved within that uniqueness was their right as a human person. And I acknowledge that. And I've seen the change come, drastic change come about with the respect, because before, Takatāpui tāne are quite a, what's the word, it's not vicious, but they're very callous. Very callous in their behaviour, because they only know how to survive by mouthing off and getting physical and being mean. And and if you get the opposite, who are those people who play the female role and are quite subdued and very, you know, there's a gentle softness in them. And I've watched the development, I call it, but not so much the change. Humans develop, and they only develop with knowledge that they require so as they can progress forward in whatever they endeavour, and that's how I put that. So, I've watched the development, and I've watched 16-year-old babies, that I call them, I say, you're my mokopuna. Come into this organisation, and I've watched them develop, and now 10 years, and I use Jordan Harris as a John, because he was our baby when Ian and I started, and he was sweet 16, and he's ever so gentle, and watched him develop over the years, and said to him, "You need to think about where you're going. There's this organization, and if you have if there's a place for you in it, I'd like you to apply for it." And he said, "Oh, Auntie, I'm a bit shy, so we practice and we do, I do a lot of playback and I do a lot of just acting out and role situation, play roles and things like that, until they get the plot and they're quite happy. But it's a repetitious way of teaching, and until they feel they've got it." So I said, "Look, you make a fantastic kaimahi." So he went and did that, and after being assistant to Te Hira Kiakia, and then it was time for Te Hira Kiakia to move on, but I encouraged Jordan, "Don't ever give up. Dream your dreams, set your goals, and then just go for it. As soon as Te Hira Kiakia goes, you're it." "Oh, really?" I said, "Really." So Hira Kiakia went down to Papa, and then Jordan took over in that position he's in now. And it's because of his gentleness, he makes a good leader. I said, "You know, you don't need the big waha. What you need is to have to go and pono, and you know how to do that. And you know how to upskill yourself with your reo. So it makes you more proficient in everything you do." So, and so now he's at that top level of the position in the organisation. And he's a good leader. A good leader is a leader who's quite clear in their mind that if it's ticker and pawner, and he still comes and uses, "I'm just a backup. Auntie will always be there if the hard basket is too hard," and it will be. I make no bones about that. But before Auntie gives you the answers, you have a mind of your own. You need to think quite clearly and make sure that it's going to work. And that all I do is just say, "Yep, that's not, or no, you can do this." And so we finalize it, and then it works.
Is this how Nana taught you?
Yes. You learn by asking questions, you learn by making mistakes, you learn by all humans do, and you give it a go. My nanny never gave me the answers. She used to use the phrase, "Ma te wa." Wa is time. The time will come when you will know. And I use that with every person that I've helped along the way. Because what's the use of me giving the answers? That doesn't solve their problems, or does it make them alert to use the mind to think? And that's the strategy I've always used. It's her words, "Matua, come with your girl." And he's saying, too impatient, "But why, man? When is the wa coming?" He said, "The wa will come and you will know. Then you stop asking questions."
But that must be quite tricky, though, because, I mean, in this day and age where everything is so fast,
yeah,
to actually say, "Just wait, it will come," that must...
I knew what she meant, but I think it clicked to me when I was a teenager. I think, that might have been so impatient and asking when I was little, because all the children were saying, "But why, Mummy, why?" The whole philosophy behind it is that at that age, young age, you're really not ready to be told the answers until you actually develop in your mind and do the action yourself. So, but you don't ever give up trying. I said, "I'm your bag, I'll do it myself, blah, blah, blah." And then I'd be the recipient of it because, well, I tried it, but it was wrong. It wasn't ticker. So, but I think that's the philosophy I've worked with, and I've taught so many people that same thing, and they've held on to that and treasured that and tried to look at the actions that they do, but always give encouragement to others to begin to think for themselves. So that's what I've done.
What's your role with the foundation now?
The role for the foundation came about when this Rachel manager, was the director, and because the boys had worked with her, and when I refer to the boys as children, there's positions of responsibility now that they've taken over had been created because Rachel had a terrific vision, and she had quite specific ideas of the partnership and doing work, money together. And she gave that space and the time for it to develop, and we're grateful to her. Throughout the whole organisation, I can honestly say that Mama Terry and Richard and all the older takatāpe, they had gone through the dark ages, as I call them, because they were the first to go through, and all, not just the Māori, but with Pākehā as well. And then they all had to fight for their survival with the police and the community just being phobic about what they were trying to demonstrate. And but when it comes to this, I call this another generation, because then things began to change for the better. But I actually thank the older takatāpe, both Wahine and Tāne, for doing what they did. Now the young ones don't have to go through that anymore. Why? Because the whole world now is educated around the acceptance of the uniqueness of each individual and can express quite clearly how they feel about themselves. Yeah.
And so your role now at the AIDS Foundation, what is that?
Yes, that developed with Rachel and the whānau, and it had to take the old and the young and Māori especially to say no more now, because they didn't make it in their times. Even when they had positions in the trust for a Māori person to go, and Richard and Mama Terry had been involved right from the very beginning. And if their cry hadn't been heard, well then they still carried on, because, you know, they were the recipients of that sort of behaviour when they were developing. So change had to come. And the change has come about that with most Māori now, we're looking at the Treaty of Waitangi, our own tino rangatiratanga. Our tino rangatiratanga means we are now responsible for being the partners that we have sung to tino. And what does that mean? It means that organisations like the New Zealand Foundation then could provide at the top level kaumātua-kuia. And kaumātua-kuia within the rohe in the areas in Aotearoa is to acknowledge tangata mana whenua of each of the areas. And in the whānau hapu iwi. And to always get back and acknowledge that they are tangata mana whenua. So that has happened, and it's been an exciting time for Māori. And without its hiccups, I mean, you know, we still had to go through all that. But when I was asked, it was the boys that chose me, and they said, oh, Auntie Wai's been with us since we were 16, and we'd like her to come. And I was greatly honoured. of course I said, because I've been dealing with you all these years, and I have a passion for people, and actually, and of course I've got to do this. And I'd asked that my kaumatsu here is Takutai Wiki to see if I'm orake, and I told him what they had asked me. And he said, well, what are you asking me for? And I said, oh man, it's just good manners for me to tell you because you're tangata manakino. And he said, well, you're doing the work, away you go. And if you need me, I'll be here. And I guess that's the protocol as well, as a respect. Okay, so I was chosen to do that position. And at the time, one of the boys, Jeff, was asked to do, because we celebrated last year, 2010, the 25 years of the organisation, and they had plenty of celebrations, and so they required a whole lot of things that needed to be looked at. And so he wrote the organisation and just give a document of all the things that have happened. And the Māori input as well. So he was also asked to write how to behave in the porphyry, the procedures and all the things. So he called me up, and him and Jordan, and said, Auntie, can you help us? I said, certainly. So we didn't be able to just put that on paper and to have it okayed by the trust and have it okayed by the directors and began to put it into real action, because this has been going on for a long time. When I say real action, we are now being acknowledged financially to do the work that is required when needed. And I've been advocating that for all kaumatu kia, no matter what organisation I've been in. And being at that level as well with people at the head, they say this is it. It's not negotiable, and for these reasons, and here are the ways around it and how we can behave with it. And everybody was okay with that, so much so that everybody wanted to practice, they wanted to be, upskilling themselves, because it is a trauma. They can partake, no matter who the visitor is, no matter where we are, no matter who's been welcomed or who's been farewelled. It's just an acknowledgement and respect of the human person who we are performing for.
Interestingly, you were saying about the 25th celebrations.
Yes.
Did you think back in 1990 when you started doing this kind of work that you would be doing similar stuff 20 years time?
Yes, I did, because that's one of the things that my nanny taught me. Whenever you make a commitment to any work that you do in the community, no matter what work it is, you make a commitment to the better end till you depart, or use that to teach others so as they can. No one's indispensable, she used to say. You can die tomorrow, somebody will take your place, but it's to teach others. That's what I've tried to do with Tarakapu Tāne Wāhine. As the age groups go, then the old teaches the young, and then these ones here are old, so the next lot come and they teach, and you pass the knowledge on. Knowledge is not ours to keep. Doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the universe. And it's given unconditionally. So who are we to do that?
Well, Auntie Wai, thank you so much for taking the time and being so generous with your time and memories over the last little while. I really appreciate it. So, thank you.
Thank you, Gil. So just before we finish, I just want to thank you and thank the organisation and GABA, especially where the funding has come from. And yet we were part of the GABA functions for the celebrations of the 25th year. And the work that that needs to be told, needs to be written, needs to be photographed, needs to be used on modern technology, because that's part of the stories, obviously, and coming forward to now and to the century. And it could be used as a learning process for all who are keen to take up the challenge one way or another. And, yeah, so I just wanted to say thank you very much for your, well, and those people who were very generous to choose me to tell my story. Okay, so with that, I'd just like to finish with a karakia and give thanks. Yeah. Tēnei tātou. He tō mātou matu nui te rangi tēne timbihi a te kia koe mō tēnei rā, mō tēnei kōrero rero, I runga I ngā kaupapa o te tuapapa a mate arai kore o Aotearoa, me ngā takatāpu tāne wāhine hoki, me ngā whānau katoa whānau o Aotearoa. Tēne timbihi a te kia koe mō manaakitanga. Ahokoa pupuhi ana te hau a tāwhiri mate I waho e mahanana I roto. No reira, kia u, kia mau, ki te kaupapa I tikana. No reira, e ngā kuia, e ngā karaua, e ngā mātua, ko wehea te kauta ki tō te ara, mui mai I roto te ariki. Te hunga mate ki te hunga mate ki tātou, te hunga ora. Pikita ora kia tātou katoa. No reira, tēne timbihi a te kia koe. Kautua katoa. Whakamaua kia tīna, haumi e hui e tāhai ki e. Thank you very much.
This program was funded by a generous grant from the Gay Auckland Business Association Charitable Trust. For more information, visit gabba.org.nz.